Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I am one of your hosts, Greg.
And I'm your other host, Ronak. And today we're going to talk a little bit about cryptocurrency, everything what? Going on.
Crypto?
Crypto. I thought crypto was dead. Kind of is. Maybe it's getting even more dead too. Right now. Lots of news deader. Going on. It's deader. That's the technical term. But yeah, lots of news going on with Coinbase and Binance right now. This is a very fast moving space. So hopefully by the time we put this episode up, everything is still relevant. If there's new lawsuits, new crazy things going on, we'll try to address it in future episodes. Crypto is also one of those things that moves very rapidly. The price moves very quickly. So I don't want anything on this podcast to come off as like a recommendation of either buying or selling any of the crypto assets out there. Do your own research and homework on that kind of stuff. Fast forward 100 years from now, maybe this stuff's completely taken over. Maybe it's all completely died and gone to zero. I don't know. Greg doesn't know.
Speaking of dying, so have you ever heard a physician say this? You know, everybody stops bleeding at some point. That's how I feel about crypto.
Oh man. Wow.
It's either going to die or it's going to stop bleeding. But yeah. I have a feeling it's going to die.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. So let's double click onto the news of what's going on right now. So Coinbase and Binance are two of the biggest crypto exchanges in the entire world. So what is a crypto exchange? It really is, you could think of it as a website or a mobile app that you go to basically trade your US dollars or other normal currencies for cryptocurrencies. You can actually go and buy and sell them on these exchanges.
Is there a reason why it's called an exchange and not a brokerage? I mean, it's a brokerage, right? Like all you're doing exactly what you'd be doing in a brokerage account. So what's the difference?
That's interesting. I think there's one difference that comes to mind. And on a brokerage account, I think it's kind of designed for you to hold your assets there long term. I think exchanges, you can, but they're not really designed for that. Does that make sense?
Like Coinbase is designed for that.
So Coinbase,
isn't that the whole point of Coinbase is to hold those crypto assets?
Right.
Isn't that what they do?
So on most of these exchanges, not all of them, but most of them, you can actually move your cryptocurrencies off the exchange, right? So if you get a physical hardware wallet, you can transfer your Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever it is off of the exchange into a hardware wallet. I think that's a lot more difficult to do with, let's say, your Amazon stock.
Are they not also basically an exchange also? If you're holding it there, but you can then move it again? Like,
you can't. You
how
can't
do those wallets work, actually? I don't know how that works.
You can't exchange it in a wallet. It's just a place to store it.
This is also confusing. So it's like a savings account that has no yield? Like, how does a wallet
make money?
Like,
it's more like a safety deposit box at a bank.
Doesn't Coinbase have a wallet?
Yes, Coinbase also has a wallet.
Okay, so
This stuff is clearly very tricky, very complex.
I wonder how many of these physicians that are listening to this actually have crypto investments. I would love to know that. I did for a little bit, and it was way too volatile for me. I got out.
Right. I mean, at the peak, I think the crypto industry as a whole, the cryptocurrencies just themselves, was worth over $3 trillion. So,
what is it at now?
What is it now? It's about $1 trillion. So definitely gone down quite a bit. But still, $1 trillion worth of assets is still quite a bit. I think there still is a lot of technical people looking at this space to see if it can be something big in the future, you know, especially with like Apple and Facebook building out the metaverse. You know, how does crypto factor into that?
Okay, but I have a question. Tell. So what are the use cases for crypto, realistically? I mean, it's to what? Use your non-fiat currency digitally.
Right.
But you now have Apple Wallet, Google, like all of these different versions of US dollar-backed fiat currency that you can now use digitally. So what's the actual use case now for crypto? I mean, I am not a huge crypto guy. I got into it a little bit, but I'm still confused by it.
Yes. First of all, Sam here, I'm not a huge crypto person, but let me just give you a little bit of an idea of what I've walked away from looking at this. And this is probably more about Bitcoin than any other cryptocurrency, but I guess it could apply to all of them. For us living in a first world country, very developed nation, maybe it's not all that useful. You know, when we think of inflation, we're thinking about like what, maybe 2, 3, maybe an extreme 5% year over year. But there are other countries where their currency is being inflated by hundreds, if not thousands of percent every year, right? So just being able to buy groceries today versus tomorrow could be a pretty big difference, right? So their currency is just not very stable. So that's one area where transferring for whatever your local currency is into a Bitcoin, which is still very volatile, but significantly less volatile than some of these smaller local currencies. And I think that that's fine. You can always transfer it into the US dollar or the euro.
That was
going to
be my question. Yeah.
Also.
No, that was going to be my next question, like a dumb question, but can't you just
the governments of those small countries are going to be resisting of people being able to transfer their money like that. So they might try to block you in a bunch of different ways. Crypto could
for
be
the
a
US
bit
dollar
different.
Idea.
Yeah, that's right.
So they don't care about crypto though.
They don't really care about crypto. They just want people to keep using their local currency. So the thinking is like, as long as you have an internet connection, you can get to the Bitcoin exchange. If you want to convert into US dollars, you have to go to a US bank, which can be, you know, you can cut off access a little bit easier. But Greg, let me throw the second thing that I've walked away with all of this with is that, you know, there have been times in history where an entire populations of countries are persecuted for whatever reason or kicked out of their country. And, you know, I definitely have heard stories about, you know, my family's from India. When the British Empire left India, they split it into Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh, three separate countries, where India was primarily Hindu, Pakistan and Bangladesh were primarily Muslim. And if you just happened to be of a religion that was, you know, not of the land that you were living on, you basically were given 24 hours to pack up all your things and move across the border, right? So you couldn't go and like take all your money out of your bank account. You couldn't go sell your real estate or anything like that. And if you have all your money in gold, I mean, gold is pretty heavy, right? If you put your entire net worth into gold, you probably can't carry that all, right? Let alone walking, you know, let alone like walking through a third world developing country where nobody's going to come and steal everything from you, right? So being able to have your entire net worth on like a single thumb drive, or you just memorize a seed phrase and that's it. You can transfer your entire net worth from country A to country B and you're okay, largely. You know, you can't do that with fiat dollars or gold or almost any other asset out there. I don't know how big of a use case that is.
Yeah,
I don't know if that justifies a trillion dollar market cap, but I think people are taking that idea to an extreme.
Well, that's a point that I want to make though. Is like that is a tremendous use case for a very small, like I don't want to say small, but for a population of the world. But the problem for me is that crypto, maybe that it was built for something like that, but it no longer feels like crypto is for that reason, being able to transfer your own wealth and net worth across the world without having to worry about it being taken.
Right.
It doesn't feel like that anymore.
Yeah, I think it's just been so dominated by trading and speculation and scamming other people and try to making money in like, you know, 24 hours, that it's just become a gambling tool in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of the benefits that it does provide the world are
an unregulated
are so
gambling
small and
tool.
It's gotten hidden. Yeah, I think there are a couple legitimate use cases, but does it justify a $1 trillion market cap? I think that sounds like a stretch to me.
It's amazing that it still has a $1 trillion market cap, to be honest, with how everything's gone over the last year and a half. It's that's pretty tremendous that it's still that large of a market cap. That's $1 trillion is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, how much of that is Bitcoin? Probably 60%.
Like 60-70%.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, let's get to the news.
Yeah, the news. So again, Coinbase and Binance, two of the biggest crypto exchanges out there. They basically are being sued by the SEC for listing unregistered securities. And we'll double click on that on just a second. The two lawsuits are a little bit different, but we'll keep things at a little bit of a high level. And then we're also seeing Coinbase suing the SEC in return also, basically saying that there is no rules that the SEC has put out for how they can get everything registered. And they don't believe that they are selling any actual securities. They're also threatening to leave the United States and go over to Europe or the Middle East or some other place in the world. So there is a little bit of a back and forth on you know, is this stifling innovation or is this actually helping the US citizen base and investors alike? And the real core of what I think they're getting at is, are these cryptocurrencies either commodities or securities? So let's double click on the difference there real quick. A commodity is just any kind of good that's out there. Think orange juice or gold or anything like that, right? There's no regulation that says that you can't buy and sell orange juice at will, right? But as we've talked about in a previous episode, you do have to be an accredited investor to buy and sell private company stock, right? There's what's called a Howey test, which goes through like a few different things to try to determine if a product is a security or not. And one of those things is if there's a third party that is working to increase the value of that product. So if you think about a company, right, it has employees, they go to the work day in and day out, trying to build up the product, trying to sell, do all that kind of stuff. And you as the shareholder, you benefit from their hard work, right? Orange juice, there's nobody going and working to make orange juice more valuable, right? It's just a thing that's out there.
What about milk and their lobbyists?
The milk itself would still be a commodity, right? Nobody works for milk. You have milk companies that sell milk, but there's nobody that's like, right? Right. So it's a little. It's
well, no, here's another more interesting one for you. So commodity versus security. Mm-hmm. What about art? How is art not considered a security if for the primary reason you are putting capital into buying art with the idea that it's going to appreciate over time? Like, how is that not considered a security versus something else? Because it's considered a commodity.
Yeah, it is a commodity.
Which I think is also another way that rich people shield their capital is in art.
Right. But again, like once you buy a piece of artwork, who is working to make it more valuable for you?
I mean, I would say something like the auction houses would be. So if you're, and it's like, you know, you look at, so I'm looking at Investopedia right now. What is a non-security? It's assets such as art, rare coins, life insurance, gold and diamonds are all non-securities. Non-securities by definition are not liquid assets. That is, they cannot be easily bought or sold on demand as no exchange exists for trading them. I disagree. Like Masterworks is an exchange of art. How is that not a regulated industry? I don't understand that. Like literally Masterworks is built on appreciating art, which means that that is a function of that company is to increase the value of art, which is considered a non-security. Right. Why isn't the government going after that?
So I think this is where it gets really important that these laws are a little bit fuzzy, right? And open for interpretation, right? I don't think that there's a
And I'm being a little facetious, but seriously, Masterworks is Coinbase for art.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I know that they do create LLCs for each of their pieces of artwork if you want to buy and sell.
And their assets under management, Ronak, any idea what it is? Oh, I'm just looking at their website right now.
I have no idea.
$786 million.
Wow.
How is that not?
Do you have to be an accredited investor to be a client at Masterworks, though, to buy and sell the artwork?
Ooh, I think you do, actually.
So there you go. Maybe it is considered a security and they are registered properly.
I'll have to do more research in this.
Yeah, we
securitize the artwork. There you go. We file on an offering circular with the SEC allowing anyone to, oh, maybe not. Maybe you can be not accredited. So why is the rest of art not?
Right.
Anyways, let's
just double click a little bit, right? So there clearly is an issue between securities and commodities. And if you are a startup founder looking to raise money and you're starting to go out to your friends and family to sell them a little portions of your company so that you can get a little bit of capital, I think it is important to err on the side of caution and try to make sure that you're only raising money from accredited investors if you're going to raise money from individuals, right? This is an area where you don't want to go down the route of potential lawsuits and getting in trouble with the government. Same thing on the other side. If you're not an accredited investor, I would not recommend anybody pretend that they are, just so they can try to get into an investment that they really want to get into. Playing by the rules here, I think, is important because getting in trouble with the government could lead to some bad outcomes. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out for Binance and Coinbase specifically. So basically, the government is alleging that, you know, of the hundreds and hundreds of cryptocurrencies that they're allowing their users to buy and sell, there's a big chunk of them that are unregistered securities, and they're letting people that are not accredited investors buy and sell them. So basically,
so are there then, there, because the lawsuit's really against like what, 15 or 17 different cryptocurrencies. So mm-hmm. is Bitcoin technically a registered security?
No, I think they're currently thinking that Bitcoin is a commodity. So it doesn't need to be a registered security. It's a commodity. Ethereum is right on the bubble of either way. And then you're right.
What's the difference then?
What's the difference between what?
What makes Bitcoin not a security versus Ethereum or any of the others, like Solana? Like,
yeah.
How are they any different?
So if we look at the history of Bitcoin, we don't know who created Bitcoin, right? We don't know who created gold. We don't know who created orange juice, but we do know who created Stripe, and we do know who created SpaceX, right? So I think there's just one element if we don't know who the founder is. There's also the idea of like how decentralized it has gotten over time, and maybe it's reached some threshold that in some government officials' minds is enough of a decentralization such that it is no longer a security and is now a commodity. Again, these laws, these are not black and white mathematical laws. These are very gray and open to interpretation. I would also add, and sorry for the little bit of a tangent here, but when you look at a company like Uber, they were trying to disrupt the cab industry. When you look at Airbnb, they're trying to, maybe disrupt the hotel industry. When you look at the cryptocurrency world in general, I think they've been trying to disrupt entire fiat currencies. And, you know, if Blockbuster had a way to flip a switch and make Netflix illegal, we would still probably be using Blockbuster today, right? Trying to disrupt the government, that's bold. That's what somebody really wants to try. Go ahead and try it. But that seems like a very difficult thing to actually pull off.
All right, so let's get back to these lawsuits then. So Coinbase and Binance, what are they actually being sued for?
So they're being sued for letting people buy and sell unregistered securities. You're right, there's something like 15 or 20 that were specifically listed. And some of these are actually pretty big currencies, cryptocurrencies, you know, worth tens of billions of dollars and lots of volume going in and out of these. So it is quite a bit. So what could
realistically, what does that mean? Exactly. Yeah. Like, what are the repercussions for a Coinbase or a Binance if these lawsuits are successful?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that I think can happen. And again, I'm not a lawyer, Greg's not a lawyer, but this is us just trying to interpret the news as we see it. So one, I think investors could be stuck with their cryptocurrencies, right? So if you go buy one of these assets, let's take Cardano as an example, and then it is determined that is a unregistered security, and all the exchanges in the US have to basically delist this cryptocurrency. If you're holding a bunch of Cardano, you can't sell it for US dollars. So you're kind of stuck with it, right? So maybe you can get like another country's VPN. Maybe you can give up your US citizenship and go to another country that where it's legal. But in some ways, the government is going to make it very, very difficult for you to actually liquidate it. So in some ways, you might have just lost all of your money by investing in something like a Cardano.
So with these lawsuits, though, it's not going to be untradeable until the lawsuit is complete?
No, they have
to take them down.
So Ripple and the SEC have been lawsuits with each other for a few years now. People that bought Ripple several years ago, they're largely stuck. I mean, I'm sure there's some ways that they can get around this, but like Coinbase delisted it. So if you were holding it at Coinbase, like I don't know how people can liquidate their Ripple holdings.
So that's going to be the same. So as soon as that lawsuit came in, Coinbase had to delist those 15 cryptocurrencies. So if people had $100,000 worth of Cardano, they can't do anything.
They can right now. It's up to Coinbase to proactively delist or not.
Interesting.
And you know, as the lawsuit progresses, we don't know what Coinbase is going to do next week. Maybe they fight really hard to keep everything liquid and listed on their platform. Maybe they start caving and start delisting things.
Well, I guess we'll see, because I have 26 cents worth of Cardano and 91 cents of Solana and 25 cents of Shibu Inu. So if any of those are affected in the lawsuit, I'll keep an eye on my dollar and 42 cents.
Nice. Nice, Greg. Nice. Yeah.
Get my quarter out. No, it's interesting, right? It's like, it's one of those areas that, so my problem with all this regulation stuff is like, why did it take so long? Like, cryptocurrency has been around for over a decade. Why has the government slow played this so much, knowing exactly what's going on? Like, crypto is not new. People that are supposed to be regulating this have known about it. They probably have crypto. So like, why did it take to this point to finally have some kind of lawsuit finally saying that, hey, these are unregistered securities? Like, why did it take so long? Was it because the government that's in place? Is it like, what is the issue?
Yeah, so this is just my speculation. But one, I think the cryptocurrency did take a little bit of time to develop, right? We're saying it's a $1 trillion industry. Today, it was not a $1 trillion industry 10 years ago, right? So when it's this small rinky-dink thing, maybe the SEC and other agencies in the government is not going to pay attention to it until it becomes big enough. The second thing is, especially since COVID hit, is that there was a huge bull market where prices were just skyrocketing. And that brought in a lot of people into the cryptocurrency market. And Greg, we live in a democracy, right? If there's a lot of people that are doing something and they want it to be regulated and or just legalized and be out there, it's going to be very difficult to go against the majority of people for a regulatory body, right? So if they tried to do this when it was an up market, I think these agencies would have seen a lot of pushback from all of the citizens out there, basically saying that, hey, politician, if you support this regulation, we're not going to vote for you, right? If you wait for a bear market when prices go down, people aren't as excited about cryptocurrency anymore. So they're almost, people probably are not going to go to their local politicians and saying that, like, my vote for you is dependent on what you think about cryptocurrency regulation. So I would guess that regulating this industry is probably easier during a bear market than a bull market. And I think that's probably why they waited until now.
Well, out of curiosity though, like, had they regulated it during the up market, would we still have the same number of people that lost money in crypto?
No. I mean, it's almost like because FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, those type of things happened, there's actually more acceptability from the public to regulate this space.
I think you're right. The only reason that I think the only reason the government cares is A, to not go against their fiat currency, but B, the fact that people did lose a ton of money.
Right.
Like, once that, I feel like that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back, is the fact that you had people lose their life savings in some of these events. And the public probably turned on crypto quite a bit, and that's why crypto is down so much and continues to be down. Right. So,
yeah, and again, this is a really interesting space. We really don't know how this is going to play out long term, right? If you look at Bitcoin for a second, it's something around $25,000 to $30,000 per coin right now. If you have the same market cap for gold and Bitcoin, I think that puts each Bitcoin at around $500,000 each. And if you're thinking that Bitcoin is gold 2.0 and it 2x is the market cap, could you potentially see $1 million per Bitcoin, you know, 100 years from now? I think that's at least a legitimate possibility. But at the same time, you know, earlier in our own country's history, our government has outlawed gold, owning gold before, right? I wouldn't be surprised if one day we outlaw holding any cryptocurrency, right? And, you know, people can make the argument, if the government starts outlawing cryptocurrency, that's a sign that we need it more and more. I mean, somebody passes a law saying if you're caught holding a cryptocurrency and that means death penalty for you and your entire family, I don't know if that's a good idea to hold any cryptocurrency.
Isn't that kind of what happened in China?
Kind of. China's been very all over the map. Sometimes they're really accepting of cryptocurrency. Sometimes they want to make their own. Sometimes they're outlawing it. They seem to be going down the digital yuan route, where basically they put the Chinese yuan onto their own crypto rails. So it still is a government-controlled entity, but you still get some of the technological benefits of the crypto rails.
Interesting. Yeah, this is from Yahoo. China banned the trading of cryptocurrencies in September 2021. However, the government has signaled its growing interest in exploring blockchain-related technologies. This includes non-fungible tokens, which currently remain in a regulatory gray area. It's wild, wild west with all this new technology, man.
Yeah.
Same thing with AI, to be honest. Like, it's probably going to be 10 years before AI is eventually regulated as well. Like,
right, right.
Who knows when that's going to happen and what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's already a ton of lawsuits, though.
Right. So like, what are the big stories from all of this? I think there's two takeaways that all of our listeners should take away from this. So one, again, being mindful of regulations, unregistered securities versus commodities. If you're raising money or investing in a startup, be mindful of what the accredited investor rules are. Don't try to overly skirt them, right? Like, those rules are there for a reason and you don't want to be caught breaking them. The second thing that I would say is, know what your circle of competence is, right? Most of our listeners are physicians. That means all of you are very smart, hardworking people, right? I think it's very easy to be in a space where you think you're very smart and you can learn about any industry at the snap of your fingers just because your IQ is so high or you work so hard. But there are some industries out there that are more difficult to understand for some people than others, right? So if you are a physician, you probably understand, let's say, the stethoscope world a little bit better than the Web3 world. Maybe that's not true for everybody out there, but just think about, like, what is your circle of competence, right? If you have a soda every day with lunch, maybe you know the soda industry a little bit better than everybody else. Don't go too far.
What are you saying, Ronak?
I'm saying invest in what you actually know, right? Don't invest just because you see a TikTok video.
Yeah, and if you can't explain what you're invested in, it's probably not a good idea to invest. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I invested in crypto. I had no idea what the hell crypto actually was doing. Probably was a mistake. That's okay. I'll take the capital loss. But it's something that I could never explain. I still can't really explain it. So that's probably a good sign that it's probably not something that you should invest in if you're like, I honestly don't know how this works.
So, right.
All right. Well, that's an interesting crypto. We don't do many crypto episodes. So, and honestly, we probably won't do many crypto episodes because there's really not much happening other than lawsuits. So,
right. But I'm still excited to see what your 12 cents of Cardano become over the next 5 years, Greg.
Yeah, maybe I'll hold it and just see what happens.
If that can turn
5,000 X's.
Yeah, you can buy a nice steak dinner then.
Yeah, maybe. All right. This was another crypto episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast. We'll see you next time on probably a non-crypto episode. See you, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.